You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Well, he's promoting Reebok. He's the new poster boy.
Was he?
Well, at least he didn't go Josh Gordon and show up for the promotional shoot and blow out his Achilles or his hammy or something like that. By all accounts, he's healthy. He looks good.
I think he looks great. I was sending a message out to everyone involved.
Yeah. Looking forward to my training session.
Leafs.
Well, he posted it on his Instagram account, and I guess he's in bed now with Reebok, and that's not surprising. You know, everyone's got a deal, and if you're in Toronto, you're going to have a high profile. And that's what we talked about a little bit last week. You know, the Maple Leafs need to use their leverage in terms of what kind of endorsement deals can come with being a star with the Maple Leafs, because guys all over the league can get deals with Reebok and Bauer and different...
Yeah, the mainstream hockey.
Yeah, exactly. But those companies, I would think, and I'm not privy to the books, but I would think, unless you're Crosby, Ovechkin, Doughty, you're not getting big endorsement deals just because you're a good player on a decent team in a bad hockey market.
No, but
you're not getting that.
You're right, but it is known in the hockey circles that if the bigger the market you play in, the more access you do have to higher levels with that company.
Absolutely.
Like when I played in Calgary, I got a better endorsement deal than I did, for example, in Minnesota. That's just exposure.
Of course it is.
So it's a bigger fan base.
You might get a car deal where you go in, sign some autographs, here, drive this truck around, and you can have a truck or whatever. But if you're talking like big time stuff.
Yeah. We're talking brand. Right. We're talking Maple Leafs, Yankees, Cowboys.
Yep.
Like that's what we're talking about. If you're a really quality player playing in Jacksonville, people are going to pay attention to you. But if you're that good in Dallas, people are really going to pay attention to you.
Yeah.
Because you're on Sunday Night Football a lot.
Another level. Exactly.
Monday Night Football. And that's what the Leafs have to use as a leverage point when it comes to Nylander. Every dollar is going to count. And we want you here. You want to be here. It's going to boost your profile.
Right.
The more wins you get, also going to boost your profile. If you can win a Stanley Cup in Toronto, think about what that is worth.
Yep.
It all factors in, I would think, to the negotiation.
It does, but they have to be careful with that because you're right. Like you can play the Toronto angle, but if William Nylander just puts his, or the agent, not William Nylander, if the agent just puts his business hat on and says, okay, we get it. We get it's Toronto. It's not Carolina as far as marketplace, but we want fair market value. And maybe they use it the other way. It is Toronto, and where we think you guys are headed, and he's a big piece of this, you better get him signed up right away. I think they're both using the same tactics. Exactly. I think it's a both. On both sides, you can make the argument. It's just
very predictable. We don't know exactly what the numbers are, but we know what case Nylander and his camp are going to make. We know what case Dubas and the Maple Leaf camp are going to make. But it was interesting timing that Nylander posted on Instagram that he's got some new working relationship with Reebok, and he's in the gym, and he looks like he's working out, and he had Maple Leaf blue on.
But I thought he said, looking forward to my workout in Reykjavik or whatever. Isn't that a team? I thought there was a team involved.
Well, he's still in Sweden as far as I know.
That's what I mean. Like, I almost took it, maybe I could completely off on this. I almost took it like, hey, I'm not in Leafs training camp. I'm skating with another team, and I'm looking forward to working out with them.
Well, I think that was a part of it, but I'm pretty sure it was Reebok Canada as well. So
there was a hashtag in there.
There's part of me that also kind of crushes the point he might have been trying to make when it says Reebok Canada, not Reebok Sweden.
Right.
Because at some point, Reebok Canada is going to be like, that's great that you're working out over there, but we're paying you to play in Toronto and to pay in Canada. So good stuff.
We want to see the blue and white jersey on you.
That's why we're paying
you. The skull sign on the front of your helmet.
Exactly. So anyway, another day without Nylander signed and without him in camp. But for the first time in a number of months, since Game 7, it's a Maple Leaf game night. We got a game to talk about tonight.
Right, exactly.
We're not going to crush the details of the preseason. I mean, I think we have this conversation every single year, and it applies to every sport. Just stay healthy.
Yeah.
Stay healthy. There's a couple of guys that are going to battle for spots.
It'd be fun to see John Tavares' first game with a Maple Leaf jersey on.
Absolutely. Like, that's a big moment. This is a historical evening because Tavares is playing his first game. It's not going to be as big as opening night when the Habs are in town.
Right.
But still, for him, it's going to be a big moment. Yeah, first time he ever puts the Maple Leaf jersey on officially tonight.
And he did admit there was some nervous energy, but I mean, this guy's a veteran. He knows exactly what it takes to play, and you know, it's going to be an electric atmosphere, smaller building. Be exciting. You know, I think it's going to be a good setup. Now, the Leafs have put together, from looking at the roster, a decent lineup. Now, I don't think that's more of their home game. Usually on the road, they send more of a, for lack of better words, a scrub lineup, although we know that Matthews isn't playing tonight, so he'll be playing tomorrow. So there's your star power right there in a nutshell.
By all accounts, they've split it up into two teams, right? They've got 46 players left in camp, two 23-man rosters. Two lines are going tonight, the Tavares-Kadri line, which means the Matthews-Lindholm line will go tomorrow night. And three or four starting defensemen are going to play tonight. Two or three will play tomorrow. Freddie Anderson will play tomorrow. So tonight you're looking at Sparks and McElhinney. That backup role in that battle officially begins this evening.
Right.
Ozhiganov is playing tonight, so I'm curious to see what he's got. He's going to play.
Ozhiganov
is playing 92. Tonight.
I'm curious to see what he has, too.
Yeah.
Like, what type of player he is, just to, you know, you're gonna have to check his skating, and is he physical, is he have some bite, or is he more of a finesse player, like that type of stuff. You can read the scouting reports all you want, but now you get to lay eyes on him and see actually what, I guess, difference between stats and eye tests. Maybe they line up or maybe they don't.
Right, like the visual of Tavares in a Leaf jersey, very cool moment, but I know what John Tavares is as a player.
Yeah, I've seen him play.
If he scores three tonight or if he looks brutal, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Ozhiganov, I have no idea how this guy plays. I have no idea. And by all accounts, based on camp and early on, it sounds like he's got the inside track on making the team. So we keep focusing on the defense and how it's got to improve. And Dubas and Babcock keep trying to convince the world that this defense is better than what the average hockey fan or analyst is giving them credit for. But we'll see. You know, again, it's a preseason game, but we'll see what he's got going on tonight. There was some news that came out of the Maple Leafs skate down at MasterCard Center today. Auston Matthews was speaking with the media, and he was asked about the power play, and he said it's his understanding he's going to be on that top power play unit with Mitch Marner and John Tavares. Now, he didn't fill out the rest of it. I would guess Riley would be the guy quarterbacking. Yeah. Then it's either Nylander or Kadri as the other guy.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest, I'm still intrigued by the whole Matthews versus Babcock conversation and the relationship. And just based on what we've seen early into camp, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, tell me if I'm blowing this out of proportion. Matthews has won the battle. Hyman's not on his wing anymore. And by all accounts, I don't think he's got anything against Zach Hyman. How can you not appreciate what Zach Hyman brings to the table?
Right.
But it feels as if Matthews was prepared for a bit of a fresh start. Now Marlowe's on his wing. We know Babcock loves Hyman, and he has placed Hyman on Matthews' wing since day one.
Yeah.
Something gave there. I'm not convinced it was just Babcock having an epiphany. I think that conversation in Arizona in late April probably factored in. We all believed Matthews wasn't ecstatic with being on the second power play unit. Shows up, all of a sudden he's on that top unit.
Well, you're right.
Something happened here.
Well, who the hell doesn't have a guy that shoots the puck like that? That's a 40-goal scorer, not on the top power.
Yeah, I'll tell you who. Mike Babcock.
Last year, but I mean, there were...
No, the last 2 years.
You're right.
Who does Boston wheel out there for basically 2 minutes of the power play?
I'm not convinced Babcock is necessarily comfortable with this, but he's doing it. And it's early camp, and it could change.
You're right, but the only argument he could have is it's not like their power play was 28th. Like, they were second in the league last year at 25%.
It's been exceptional the past 2 years.
With Matthews on limited minutes or non-limited minutes, he deserves it. Every day, he should be out there for $110. Now, he may be only out there for 45 seconds because of short shifts and all that, and they have a wealth of guys that can play on there. I'm going to go at the Hyman situation a little bit differently. I'm not convinced that Matthews, and I know you're not suggesting that he said get Hyman away from me.
Don't know that, but I'm not convinced that he was ecstatic specifically in the playoffs.
I don't think he would,
with Hyman and Brown on his wing when he was struggling.
And I don't think he would specifically say, get that guy away from me, get that guy away from me. But I want to be one of the best players in the world, and for me to do that, I probably need a little bit more help.
Well,
that's probably all the message was.
It was.
Also, the quote, I want to be a guy who racks up more assists.
Right, so I need a shooter.
I need a guy who can score when I put it on his tape.
Yeah.
And this isn't about me putting down Hyman. I love Hyman.
Yeah, we
And I love him on his team. And I would guarantee you Matthews knows his value and what he brings. Hyman's a really important piece. But they've been together for 2 years. Something happened. There's a reason Babcock flew down to Arizona. Like, we all know that. And everyone talked about what happened in the playoffs and the ice time and all that kind of stuff.
Well, there's exit meetings, and it starts with the coach, and then you probably go upstairs and meet with other people. And there was probably some some conversations where then it was like, okay, you need to...
Well, smoke and fire, right? So, like, it didn't look like everything was jiving by the end. Now, whether that was the relationship, whether there was an FU conversation on the bench or behind closed doors.
A lot of it was on Matthews, too. He didn't play well enough.
Well, yeah.
That's not Babcock. He didn't put skates on and go out there and get shut down by Chara.
You're right. And Babcock probably let him know it. Well, he did let him know it by pushing him around in the lineup. Because, say, when you have Hyman and Brown, that's not showing faith that you need that guy out there for 25 or that line out there for 20 minutes. And
I think I looked at that as that's the Babcock philosophy. That when he said it, he said when he feels like Matthews needs a jolt, he puts two guys out there that do it right every day, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And this is all speculation. Again, this isn't on the record stuff that Matthews has come out and said or his camp or anything.
Right.
But I could see and I could picture this, and I don't think I'm being outlandish with this. When Matthews was struggling, he was probably thinking, you're going to put me with two guys who are further down the lineup in terms of talent and finish when I need some help here.
Right.
Give me Marner. Even give me Van Riemsdyk.
Right.
You know, or give me Marlow.
Like,
give
help me dig out instead of
exactly
instead
making
of piling
me
on.
Dig in.
Yeah.
You know, and then turn into kind of a grind line, so to speak.
Yeah.
And it's early. He hasn't even stepped on the ice for a preseason game. Opening night is 2 weeks tomorrow, but Hyman's not on his wing anymore. He's on that top power play line, as I believe he should. I think this benefits the team. But it leads to the next conversation about the captaincy. If this is the way it's played out, if I'm reading this correctly,
right,
and Matthews wants the captaincy, he's getting the captaincy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's that situation. He wants the captaincy. He's going to get the captaincy. It's going to be like the Florida situation where they brought along Barkov. I think he was an assistant captain last year. And when he was ready, Bobby Bugner said it yesterday. He's like, it's his time now. He's the best player in the team. He's the leader. Yeah. And now it's his time.
And
he had to go to another guy, the fourth line guy, McKenzie, and tell him that, which I'm sure he was okay with. They discussed it a lot earlier. But that's the way you do it. You don't just say, oh, you want it, you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to sit and watch for a little bit. And
yeah, but I'm not saying he gets it today.
I think
what I'm saying is a year from now.
Exactly.
Is
a year
Matthews.
From now it's his.
Yeah. Like if, because Matthews is a powerful guy within the organization.
Yeah, he is. But there's still a pecking order.
Absolutely. I'm not saying again.
They might find something out in his personality through these negotiations and all this stuff where, you know what, John Tavares is the next captain. They're not going to just say, oh, yeah, here it is. I do think he will be the next captain, but they're not just going to hand it to him.
Right, and I think it's important to put forth that front, that we don't hand anybody anything. This is this isn't a democracy. The coach and the GM and the owner, they kind of run and operate everything. And I think that's important, and that's a point we touched on last week. You don't just hand the guy everything because he's a great player, but I think they listen to him. You know, I think they realize his importance. By all accounts, I mean, it's early in camp, but he looks like he's just possessed. I expect if he's healthy, he has a monster year.
Yeah, and health is only his issue. It's not talent. It's not anything. He's just starting to come into his own. The guy just turned 21. Like, that's, you know, you if he's healthy, I agree. I don't disagree. Like, that could be a monster year and with a different dynamic. And let's go back to Hyman. With all due respect to him, I think he was miscast anyways. If you're looking at a top line, to me, Hyman wasn't going to be your top line left winger. Like, I know team coaches like to work in pairs, so you have Matthews and Nylander, and you throw in somebody who can go retrieve the puck or can be hard in critical areas.
You know what? He doesn't
Patrick
have
Marlowe
great finish.
Said.
He doesn't have great finish. He's not, like, his skill set is not of a top line player. But you can't name me five better forecheckers in the league that get the puck back. I mean, Babcock is...
That's great.
He's not dreaming that he goes in there and gets it every time. He does.
You're right, but...
But he can go out to the slot and have a slam dunk and it misses the net somehow.
Here's my thing. If the Leafs win the Cup this year, let's just say, let's fast forward, they have a great season, everything goes well, falls into place. I would predict that Zach Hyman would be on your third line. I think he's a third line winger that has up. I don't see him as a top six forward in the National Hockey League, especially on an elite team. That's the way I see it. And that, you know, when we talk about guys getting slotted, I think Connor Brown is a third line guy who can give you top 6 minutes. Same thing with Hyman. That's not a slight on their skill set or anything.
Hyman, Kadri, and Connor Brown could be the best third line in hockey.
They could be right there. Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong. There's no shame. And this isn't, you know, kick on or bag on Zach Hyman. I'm just looking at, when you look at teams that are deep, well, yeah, the Leafs are deep down the middle. They've got depth on the right side. The left side, I think Marlowe is a Hall of Famer and a star. JVR is going to be missed, like, regardless of what you think of that. But on a deep team in every position, I believe Zach Hyman is perfectly suited as a third line, whether if you left winger,
you know, based
penalty
on,
killer, elite penalty killer, all of that.
Yeah, looking at him in a nutshell, that's true. I also think when you look at the other five forwards in the top six, they're so stacked that you can have a guy like Hyman in there and you're not gonna feel like it makes it unbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other five are Tavares, Marner, Nylander, Matthews, Marlowe. Yeah. And I think again, it speaks to how much faith Babcock has in Hyman's ability and how much stock he puts in what he brings to the team, that he isn't on the third line. He's playing with the new golden boy in Tavares and Marner, and things are going to change. The blender's going to come out at some point.
Right.
But as for Matthews, today he said, and I'm looking forward to seeing this unit, if it's true, if it's Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Riley, and Kadri, that's got all the makings of a lights-out power play.
For sure.
And what it means for Nylander, I guess... We'll wait and see what it means for Marlowe and other guys and opportunities on the power play. But things are going to change a little bit for Matthews. And that was a big conversation at the end of the year. How many minutes is he going to play? Who's he going to play with? What's the relationship with Babcock?
Well,
as of now, I would think they're catering to him. We've changed up your line mates and you're going to be on this top power play unit.
They're
trying to make his life... And, you know, easy, and they're trying to put him in positions to succeed, which they should. He's their
best
player.
Give him every opportunity. You just said he looks great and he wants to have a monster year, and if he's healthy, okay, so why aren't you playing him 20 minutes a night? That should be the thought process. Yeah, Tavares should slide in right behind at 18 or 19. As I continue to say this, my concern is the psyche of Nazem Kadri, because he hasn't been a penalty killer. So you're going to get him power play minutes. That's going to make up some. But I was looking at Tyler Bozak's minutes last year. He was just under 16. I think it was 15:47 or something. But Bozak played on the power play. There were times where he was on, was he on the first power play or second last year?
Bozak was on the top unit.
Yeah, so he was on.
It was him and Van Riemsdyk,
right,
with
Kadri
and Marner.
Bozak was getting a lot of time on the power play. And I believe a little bit on the penalty kill as well. They've got to find minutes for Nazem Kadri, and
it's simple for me. You take him away from the fourth line. That's how you do it. I mean, if Matthews is playing 19 and a half, Tavares plays 18 and a half, you find Kadri 17, 16 and a half minutes.
Yeah.
And then the fourth line guy, sorry, man, you're getting 5-6 minutes.
16 and a half? 16 plus is great.
That's
for
Nazem.
Yeah, you want to talk about depth up the middle of the ice, use them. Let them play.
Right.
I agree.
Games.
I'm just saying that's, and Mike, that's his job. He has to prop everyone up, place them in situations to be successful. But if you have the depth in critical areas, you have to use it to your advantage. And I just keep looking at it where Barkov... I'm looking at his minutes, and I know he's not going to get...
But they don't have a third-line center like Kadri.
They're not going to... But that's what I'm saying. You're not going to get to McDavid's minutes if you're Matthews, but you may be able to sprinkle it a little bit more fairly, if that makes sense, and get Kadri the type of minutes that he can be effective in. That's what I was trying... I was trying to go through a bunch of different scenarios the other night in looking at ice time, because... I thought, okay, you can get him some on the kill. Well, he hasn't been used on the kill. He hasn't.
Well,
not
that's a another thing that's going to change. Apparently, Tavares and Marner are going to kill penalties, or at least they're going to attempt that. Which again is Mike Babcock. Something's happened here with Babcock because for the past 2 or 3 years, it's been wingers and it's been grinders. It was Hyman and Komarov as their top power or penalty kill unit, followed by Brown and any combination of Marlowe, Kapanen, whoever's on the fourth line.
And I like the idea of getting your skilled guys out there because they understand how the skilled minds of the power play team on the opposition works. You can anticipate passes, understand what's going on, but the amount of block shots and people's hands getting hit, that's the element I don't like.
That's
about
the only thing that scares me. I mean, was it McDavid that blocked that shot with his skate early on in the season last year and it dropped him and you're like, oh, okay. Like that's
thanks.
One errant, you know, shot can change the dynamic. I mean,
can change your year.
Well, but these guys know they're smart, skilled players, but they're also it depends on the way that they want to kill too. If it's lanes or if it's sticks, because we all know forwards can accidentally on purpose make it look like they tried to get into that lane, but they gave a. I would always
they
tease
went the
Aginla.
Long road.
Yeah, I would tease Aginla like he was fastest player straight. If there was a breakaway, but boy, to get in his defensive lane, for some reason, it looked like Marcel Dion.
Which I'm not sure Babcock is going to be comfortable with.
Right.
You know, I think Babcock, maybe he's just in a position where he's thinking, I'm going to experiment. I'm
going to
move some things around, which is what he should do.
Exactly.
Absolutely. But things have changed a little bit. They're going to change. And ultimately, if the philosophy is we want to get our best players on the ice as much as possible, pretty smart move,
I would
say.
It's a good philosophy.
We're teeing up the preseason game tonight. They're in Lucan, Ontario. You can hear the game right here on TSN 1050. Puck drop at 7:30. Pregame at 7, the Monday nighter. The Bears, man, that defense looks good.
Dude, every time I watch Chicago now, I'm thinking, like, John Gruden, are you high, buddy? Like, are you high?
I've got the
this guy is running around tackling people, strangling the quarterback every play. I'm like, What am I missing here?
And 2 weeks in a row, Gruden's come out and been like, the pass rush, we got to figure this out, man. I don't know what happened, but they couldn't get after Case Keenum on Sunday. Week one, they couldn't get after Jared Goff.
Well, but was last week he reminded everyone that he didn't want to play there, though.
That was the all-time backpedal of all-time
backpedals.
We're
not privy to that information. Like, he may have walked into the office and said, get me the hell out of here.
Someone posted the comparable stats of Khalil Mack through 2 weeks with the whole Oakland Raiders defense. I got to find it.
How did it look?
Basically, Mack is outperforming
Mack's
all of them.
That line is just...
Yeah. It's like same amount of sacks, more fumbles caused, more touchdowns, obviously, more
rushes.
Tackles, rushes, everything across the board. He's a one-man wrecking crew, and Russell Wilson was running for his life last night. The Seahawks are 0-2. They look
Pete
like
Carroll
a team.
Pete Carroll looked like you never see Pete Carroll. He's usually that upbeat guy.
Yeah, the Scrabble face.
He had a bit of a Scrabble face going on.
They've panned him on the sidelines.
Looked like he was crying.
Yeah, he was rattled last night. He doesn't know what to do in Seattle. They don't have the talent around Russell Wilson. That's what it feels like anyway. So we'll get into that. And Masai Ujiri on Kawhi Leonard earlier this afternoon. And how about that crowd at Camden Yard last night? We'll touch on that next. Leafs in action tonight. Jays in Baltimore. You see that crowd last night at Camden Yards? They announced...
8 G's?
Yeah, just over 8 grand was the announcement. But
they're lying.
It's absolutely a fabrication.
And I don't know why they bother lying. Everybody sees it. It's like, what, are you too embarrassed? They do it in Carolina all the time. They're too embarrassed to say there's 2,400 people here.
But that's paid.
Who cares?
I
want to know the people in the building.
So you want asses in the seats, not who's paid for the gate.
I want to know what kind of grit grinders showed up when it was bad weather, one of the worst teams in the history of the league, up against another awful team in the Jays on a Monday night in September.
Yeah.
Who was grinding that out?
14 people.
Listen, I've seen a lot of bad crowds, and it's difficult to compare, and maybe it's recency bias. I don't think I've ever seen a smaller crowd for a regular season game.
It was tough.
When it wasn't like after a 7-hour rain delay or something like that.
Right.
I mean, it started at 7:30. They
just
pushed the game back like 25 minutes. But like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. It looked like there were about 12 people in the outfield, like from left to right. from foul pole to foul pole, about 12 people.
It was have your own section night.
It was.
It
was brutal.
I remember taking down, I believe, a tweet or a post. I called a Panthers-Senators game a couple years ago in Florida. And right
I
after
remember
the
end, that. You remember? Took a picture from the press box.
Yeah,
and
I think
said
I sent
it's like
you got, yeah, it's friends and family night or something like. And I took it down, and I because I didn't want to offend the
people that actually showed up.
But like the Panthers organization, like I played there and stuff, and it's not their fault at that point. Like the team was, it was a pretty decent game that night, but it was like a Tuesday night. It was just a rough draw. And you could see it. Like, I remember, I'm not lying, I believe it was Chris Cuthbert and I calling the game, and as I was talking, somebody sneezed in the crowd, and I heard it, which was so weird, because there was just not enough people in the building.
Well, this is why Toronto's lucky. The Blue Jays, the Raptors, and the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
They never have to worry about this because of the size of the market.
Yeah. Big city.
The amount of money that's here. The amount of tourism that comes through here.
Correct.
Like, Baltimore, again, is historically awful. Like, on record, they're going to be one of the bottom 10 or 15 teams to ever play the game. But they got a rich history in Baltimore.
Right.
And, again, bad weather and all that kind of stuff. But Camden Yards is a beautiful park. Yeah. Beautiful park. And
such a great setup. And
in a month or two, people are going to be like, I wish there was a ball game on I could watch or go down to
tonight.
They've
lost 107 games this year.
Oh, I understand.
It's tough to put anybody in that building.
It is, but the Jays are only going to win like 70 this year. And they're still getting, you know, we scoff at like, oh, they only got 18,000 last night. And then people are like, well, it was probably only about 13 actually there.
But
13 grand compared to like 1,500 last night.
And it looks bare, but, you know, the dome looks bare, too. Like, it seats so many people. Like
of course. That doesn't help, the optics of it.
But when you're having a bad season, people don't want to make the long trek.
And I'll tell you what, that's where the pressure points come in as far as, like, a rebuild or a retooling, because the owner is sitting there looking at that crowd saying, I can't keep doing this. I can't keep putting this type of team out on the field. Look at the crowd. Nobody's eating. No one's drinking. Nobody's buying jerseys. It's garbage.
That's the pressure point.
Yeah. So owners, how long can I continue to do this? Do I go to the GM and say, this offseason, go blow your brains out and sign guys?
Well, that's why I give them credit for not calling up Vladdy Guerrero Jr., because it would have been easy for them to go to the owner and be like, we're going to bring him up, and a lot of people are going to be interested and come out to the park, and we're going to get ratings.
10,000 more people easily.
If he was debuting tonight, let's say it was tonight, and Vladdy was coming, and you knew he was coming, and they were pushing it, and it's like debut at the Dome tonight, you would see,
sellout,
I don't know what the
close
number was. No, it wouldn't be a sellout. That's a lot of people. But you'd get an extra, I think, 5,000 to 10,000 tickets sold, maybe. Like, that's, it would be, because we've been hyping this kid up for so long.
Right, right.
If he finally got out there and made a debut, they would see a tangible difference in ticket sales and the amount of money they could pull in.
People would want to watch him develop and see right in front of your eyes. Right?
Guerrero jerseys up all over the park, and people would be buying that kind of stuff. They would absolutely benefit from it. And Shapiro and Atkins did the right thing. We're not going to do that just to sell some tickets and create a buzz in a lost September. We're going to hold on to this guy, make him wait, keep that extra year,
right,
and hopefully it benefits the team long term. So we'll see where it goes a year or two from now. Next year, they seem to be committed to rebuilding and 70 wins, and it's about the kids. 2-3 years down the road, ownership might have a different perspective. Masai Ujiri in town talking about Kawhi Leonard a little bit today. We'll get into that. Leafs in action tonight. John Clayton on the NFL in about 30 minutes. So Rosenhaus, I mean, he's Ari from Entourage. Like, that's kind of the perception he puts forth. And he's here to support his guy. But he sent out a statement today that Antonio Brown had a personal issue. But this was the best part, and this was what was incriminating, because in Pittsburgh, they're freaking out. After Brown tweeted out, okay, trade me, and we'll see what I can do, and Le'Veon Bell, and he came out in support of Bell, and his teammates are not supporting Bell, and the Steelers are losing, and people think there's a mutiny against Tomlin. Rosenhaus said he called the Steelers on behalf of Brown to tell them that he had a personal issue and he wouldn't be there. Now, you guys are pro athletes. Is that the way it works? Or would the player be like, hey, coach, well in advance, I got something going on? Why would the agent be calling?
There's no reason for an agent. It's like a, if it's a daily, you call the trainer yourself and say, look, I got food poisoning, I'm sick. You call the head coach yourself. Look, I got to deal with something. To have you, that's
even
garbage.
A text message in today's like world.
I think if you're not showing up to practice, you got to call the coach or call the trainer.
The trainer. If you're sick, the trainer gets the first call because he's probably been dealing with you in the middle of the night or something.
And he'll tell the coach you got to replace this guy in the lineup. But for the agent to call,
there's something more. Garbage. But it reeks of something more too. For the agent to be involved.
Like what he's called four years old, where you can't call somebody and say, hey, I got an issue today?
There's so much smoke here. I don't believe for a second that this isn't a story. Like Rosenhaus, his job is to try to, he's going to represent
his job is to try to get him the most money possible.
Right, which he's already got. Yeah. He's got a big deal and he's making a ton of money.
And make sure if he wants to leave, it's not to call someone and say he's not going to be there.
Right, and he's trying to put it to bed in the statement. He's like, there's nothing going on. He doesn't want out. This is a non-story. No, I'm sorry, dude. It is a story. Everyone saw him ream out the coordinator over the weekend. The team's in trouble. He tweets out something really strange that you don't see the average player tweet out, basically saying, trade me, and we'll see what happens. Who would say that? And now you're out issuing statements after he doesn't show up to practice for the first time after losing a game over the weekend. Something is significant here. Something is up.
It reeks.
It reeks of some sort of disconnect or a toxic atmosphere with the team or Brown and Tomlin and his teammates. Something's going on in Pittsburgh.
Well, let's see what happens tomorrow. If he shows up or not, because if he's not there tomorrow and addressing it, like that would be gutless if he shows up tomorrow and then doesn't talk about it. Unless he said, like, hey, I was sick. Because then, I mean, there is a flu going around. It's changing.
The flu's in Pittsburgh? Is that going around in Pittsburgh?
No, but people are getting sick now because it was cold and then it's 27 degrees. People are getting sick here in Toronto.
When aren't people getting sick?
That's true.
Every time of year, someone's got something,
that
right?
That's true. Kids
I
are
might
germs.
Be sick
too.
Next Friday.
Oh yeah.
What do you have up your sleeve?
Personal day.
Already
yeah,
in
tired,
September.
Eh?
Look
tired.
At you.
We've been back
fourth
what?
Week. Fourth week. A personal day. Like I'm going away somewhere.
Where
fourth
are you going?
Week.
But what do you care?
Because I care.
Well, it's not. And I'm just saying.
What did you just do for 9 weeks? Why didn't you go away when you were off for July and August?
I'm just saying. I'm not. It's not 100%.
Okay.
But there's a potential personal day coming up.
Well, get Drew Rosenhaus to issue a statement
to call you.
On your behalf.
Yeah.
I would like to
hear my agent, Ian Pulver, to call you.
Okay, I'm looking forward to hearing from Ian.
Yeah.
I want to hear from Ian, and I want to get an explanation.
Yeah, no tax, no nothing, just
we should do that. Next time you have a personal day, get an agent, your agent, to issue a statement.
I will, and he'll fax it to you, or email it to you.
No. Tell him to call it in on the hotline.
I will.
Or call the Overdrive hotline.
Yeah.
I will.
We got a couple of calls again last night.
Actually, fire
one
up.
We got a bunch of them last night.
Fire one up.
Here's what's happening, okay? We'll play a couple, but they're starting to get ridiculous now.
Are they?
Okay. I knew this was coming. It took 4 days of the hotline being open, but we all have an affinity for, well, I wouldn't say an affinity, but the show is a connection with Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, Buffalo Bill, yes.
And the song that we always play.
What's that called? Wild Horses?
Wild Horses by... No, it's Goodbye Horses.
Goodbye Horses.
By... I don't remember what the hell the band
was. What is
it? But do you want to hear a call from Mike?
Yes.
And this is... You knew this was coming.
Fire it up, Mike.
Mike from Scarborough.
So, Goodbye Horses. That's the whole call. And then he just hangs up. He plays the song. What's it called?
Q Lazarus or whatever, wasn't that?
Q Lazarus, that's the name of the group. And the song is Goodbye Horses, and that's when Buffalo Bill...
Haze and Noodles.
No, Haze and O-Dog, isn't it?
Yeah.
We got to get the old one.
Yeah, we'll get the original.
That's awesome that he called. Who was that, Mike from Scarborough?
Mike from Scarborough.
Thanks for that one. Do we have a real one to get to?
Do you want to hear from one of our buddies up at Toys R Us?
Go ahead. Clinton?
I don't think it was Clinton. Who do we
Antonio?
Have go ahead.
Hey guys, it's Antonio from Toys R Us Roadbridge. Firstly, I'd like to thank Jamie for the picture and for shouting us out yesterday. Also, my second point is between Nylander and Marner, I'm looking at their contract predictions, projections, and I'm seeing Nylander at 6.5, and people are saying Marner 8.5. And I really don't understand why. I want to know if you agree with that, because there are only 8 points to separate them between them in their careers. So I want to know why, if you think Marner is worth $2 million more than Nylander.
Great take. Great question. Antonio up at
Antonio from Toys R Us.
Shout out.
Yes. And I give almost, I don't know, it's like somebody's gotten people to believe that Marner's that much better of a player than Nylander. I don't know. And if you look at the stat, what are the stats comparable?
They're pretty close.
69 to 61 last year. And
so eight points doesn't equate to $2 million difference.
It doesn't on one season. But I just, this is why.
And there's all kinds of things factored in the con. Like,
that's
it's like trajectory.
Saying.
Where are you going? What can you produce? But
you're right. Like, but I think 8.5 is really rich for Marner right now, too. I wouldn't sign him to 8.5 right now. Now, he doesn't need a contract. He still has a contract. This is the difference when people are saying, let's say, 6.5 to 8.5. If Marner has a very good season this year, he's going to be in a different boat than William Nylander. Because William Nylander, to play hockey this year, has to sign a contract. Mitch Marner doesn't. So Mitch Marner has one more year, technically, on Willie Nylander to prove that he's worth more.
Right.
If Nylander wants a bridge contract, then he's going to take a two-year deal, and he's going to prove that he's worth more, too. But if you're just saying, if Mitch Marner said, I want an eight-year deal today, it's not 8.5.
But that's what I think Antonio's asking. As of today, if they were both negotiating today, they're both in the same room with Dubas.
Right.
He's right that Marner, I don't think, has the right or has a case to sit here and say, I'm definitely $2 million better than William Nylander.
And I don't disagree with that.
I would take Marner over Nylander if I had one option game tonight. I'm taking Marner over Nylander, but not by a substantial margin.
No.
Nylander can, we know what Nylander can do. He's a very talented player.
I'm sure that's part of what's going through his head. Do I want to lock in at $6 million and then see these guys blow it out of the water, and I'm going to be sitting there thinking, how are these guys $5 and $7 million better than I am?
But here's the way around that. Get a 2-year bridge deal.
Yeah.
And go out and prove it.
Go back.
That's the only thing I've been saying all along, that I,
if, like, what could be so bad about signing a 2-year $6 million bridge deal per year, and then just,
we don't know what the number is.
Well, I know,
say
whatever
it's five.
It is, man.
Say it's five and a half. Like, what money are you leaving on the table? Because the worst that you can get is a qualifying offer at 5.5 or whatever 2 years from now.
Then you get arbitration rights and everything.
And plus, you're going to know, or we're going to know, and the organization is going to know what type of player you are. You're 2 years in right now at 61 points or 60 points average for Nylander. Marner projects a little bit more, but Marner's got that extra year because of his deal right now. So bridge yourselves. And then go and blow it out of the water and win and do all these things that you can cash in on.
John Clayton, NFL insider, will join us in about 20 minutes on the Monday night or last night. How much trouble are the Seahawks in? How good are the Bears? What's up with Antonio Brown and the Steelers? And Pro Football Hall of Famers issuing a statement, or a lot of them issuing a statement that could be groundbreaking. Our boy Chaser was tweeting about this earlier today. We'll tell you about that in the 5 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.